Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Skylar Jeremias. Recently, Amgen released the latest update to its biosimilar trends report, detailing some of the big successes for biosimilars in the United States since their market introduction in 2015, as well as current market trends, predictions for the next phase of biosimilar competition, and advice for stakeholders going forward. The report also gave insight into how biosimilar policies, such as reimbursement structures, could develop in the future, and whether the United States is heading towards greater biosimilar adoption. Today, I'm joined by Chad Pettit, the Executive Director of Marketing and Global Biosimilars Commercial Lead at Amgen. Chad is a longtime friend of the Center for Biosimilars, having spoken to us in video interviews in the past about previous versions of this report. He was also a recent panelist at the DIA Biosimilars Conference that was held in September 2022, and has been working with Amgen since 2000. He's been working to advance biosimilars since 2014, and is considered a market expert on the biosimilars industry. Welcome, Chad. To start us off, according to Amgen's report, biosimilars have generated about $21 billion in savings over the past 6 years, and contributed to price reductions across the board. What do these numbers say about where the biosimilar industry currently is and where it's going?
Well, thank you, Skylar, first of all, for the opportunity to be part of this podcast. I'm looking forward to the discussion here today. As we think about what we've learned in the trend report, I think the biggest takeaway is that the U.S. marketplace with biosimilars is well established, and it's growing across multiple therapeutic areas, and that includes respiratory, autoimmune, oncology, diabetes, and others. And as examples, there's now been 39 biosimilars approved by the FDA, and there's 24 that have launched since the first biosimilar entered the U.S. marketplace in 2015. And what that does is it provides patients, physicians, and payers with a range of treatment options and with much greater flexibility in the choices that they make. And as we look at how the market's developed, if you look at the therapeutic areas where biosimilars launched prior to 2019, the average share after 3 years for those products was 39%. And for therapeutic areas where biosimilars have launched in the last 3 years, the average share was 75%. So we're really seeing an acceleration just across the board with biosimilars. The approvals are advancing faster also in the U.S. than they did in Europe in the same period of time. If you look at Europe in the first 8 years, they had 15 approvals. In the U.S. in our first 8 years with biosimilars, we've had 39. I think it shows a very successful marketplace that's advancing well, it's well established. And as we look forward and look into the future, there's a significant number of originator biologics that will face biosimilar competition in the next 5 to 10 years.
The report also predicts that the evolution of the market will include a greater focus on provider and pharmacist education on biosimilars. What are some aspects about biosimilars that are important to include in future education material directed at these stakeholders, especially for those who work in specialties that have not had much or any experience with biosimilars?
Yeah, it's a great question, especially this question around specialties that have not had much experience with biosimilars. We have a survey that we featured in our trend report that found for the almost half of physicians who were surveyed who did not want to prescribe a biosimilar, 48.5% said that the reason was because they were waiting until biosimilar products had been on the market longer before prescribing them. So let's think about that. It's really critical to have education around biosimilars that focuses on the safety and efficacy of biosimilars that are approved by regulatory authorities. If you're a provider or you're a pharmacist, you need to be confident in the treatments that you prescribe to patients just in general. And the same goes for biosimilars, for prescribing biosimilars. It's important for both the patient and the healthcare professional to be secure, knowing that the treatment that they have is safe, it's effective, it's undergone the same level of rigorous regulatory review as a reference product. And for that to happen, for a patient, a physician, pharmacist, a payer they need to have confidence in biosimilars, and they need to know that there's scientifically appropriate regulatory standards that they can then have greater sense of confidence and a sense of the quality of the biosimilar.
Although infliximab biosimilars are gaining greater uptake and generating savings, adoption of these products has been slower than some of the others in the oncology space. What are some of the reasons for this slow progression?
You know, when we talk about the uptake of biosimilars, we have to remember that biosimilars are relatively new to the U.S. healthcare landscape. And infliximab biosimilars were one of the first and earliest product classes to launch. And so there's multiple reasons that may have contributed to the slow start in capturing share for infliximab biosimilars. One is price competition from the reference product Remicade. And if you look at Remicade, their price has declined by 57% since the first infliximab biosimilar launched. And that actually, if you step back and look at the bigger picture, that's what biosimilars were intended to do, create competition. And we've seen that consistently across product classes that biosimilars are bringing down prices. If you look at average selling prices, biosimilars prices have decreased 9 to 24%, and the reference product prices have decreased 4 to 21%. That's the mark of a healthy competitive market. I think another reason in terms of the slow start in capturing share for infliximab biosimilars is physician caution around changing medicines for a chronic condition like an autoimmune disease, particularly in that time frame when those biosimilars were launching. But then you look forward after that slow start, infliximab biosimilars have gained 42% share by the second quarter this year. And the reference product Remicade has 54% share. So I think that's an example looking backwards. But as we've seen since then, there's really been an acceleration in uptake as providers, payers, patients have become more comfortable and more confident with biosimilars.
What can be done to encourage greater adoption in the infliximab space? And what can the biosimilars industry learn from this experience as it prepares for the introduction of adalimumab biosimilars next year, especially as Amgen's Amjevita is going to be the first adalimumab to enter the market?
So we're looking forward, not backward. And in the autoimmune space, the planned launches of biosimilars to Humira in 2023 really are going to be a pivotal moment. Humira has the highest number of anticipated biosimilar launches over the next few years compared to reference products in other categories. And this is all going to expand the range of treatment options available for millions of people living with chronic inflammatory diseases, which is quite remarkable. We're excited about commercializing Amjevita, which is our adalimumab biosimilar, in the U.S. with a launch planned for January 31st, 2023, this next year. And we're looking forward to working with healthcare providers as they become familiar with prescribing biosimilars for their patients, and especially around the perceptions of safety of biosimilars and switching from a reference product to a biosimilar.
Additionally, what can the United States take away from the European Union's experience with adalimumab biosimilars, and how can this knowledge influence U.S. biosimilar policy?
Well, you know, I've lived and worked in Europe, and one of my biggest learnings as an American is that Europe is not a country; it's many countries. So I think the U.S., we can look to Europe and as some examples and think about the adoption of biosimilars, but it's not a perfect comparison because there are many healthcare systems and many different approaches. When we look specifically at adalimumab biosimilars in the EU, the uptake has been strong. Biosimilars now have 66% of the adalimumab share, and they achieved that within a year and a half. So it went relatively quickly.
Now, the report offers advice to different stakeholders on how to prepare for emerging biosimilars based on each stakeholder's goals and motivations. What are some ways that stakeholders could work together to achieve the goal of greater biosimilar acceptance?
That's a great question. You know, for me, one of the main takeaways here is that every stakeholder in the healthcare system can benefit from biosimilars. And that's because the competition that is created by a reliably supplied, high-quality biosimilar has the potential to alleviate the financial burden on our healthcare system in the U.S. and healthcare systems globally. And then those savings can then be redeployed to fund new innovative technologies, treatments, and preventative therapies. So, you know, stakeholders can work together to educate and advance science-based policies that support competition and enhance confidence for patients, for the physician, for prescribers, that then ultimately benefit the entire healthcare system. As we look into the near future, what we're expecting to see is healthcare providers feeling confident in the biosimilar approval process, so they can educate their patients on biosimilars and their appropriate use in their everyday clinical practice, and prescribers supporting biosimilar acceptance by being familiar with major payer coverage and reimbursement policies for biosimilars and understanding the patient support services that are provided by biosimilar manufacturers. And then in the U.S., employers seizing the opportunity to mitigate their growing health costs through increased offerings of biosimilars.
The report also mentions the new reimbursement structure that will temporarily apply to Medicare Part D plans as a result of the Inflation Reduction Act. What needs to happen to further align the reimbursement policies with biosimilar adoption?
That's a great question. You know, the U.S. marketplace with biosimilars has been gaining traction and momentum, driven significant savings for the government and for patients. And 2023 is really poised to be a pivotal year. That being said, new laws such as the recently passed Inflation Reduction Act require clarifications in order to not disincentivize the development of generic and biosimilar medicines that lower costs for patients and create savings for the broader healthcare system. And unless the law is modified further, the government price-setting components of the IRA legislation will likely stifle investments in the marketplace with biosimilars going forward. As an example of that, the IRA includes a mechanism that delays selection of a reference product for price-setting if a biosimilar manufacturer can show there is a high likelihood of biosimilar entry within 2 years. It's a good idea in theory. But the law's submission deadlines related to the delay may be difficult or even impossible for biosimilar manufacturers to meet. And it's really uncertain what evidence will convince the government that there's a high likelihood of biosimilar entry. So the delay provision would benefit from some changes to help biosimilar manufacturers that have to undertake at least 7 to 8 year development timelines and invest up to $250 million per biosimilar as we're making these development decisions and investing in these medicines. You know, it's these type of modifications to that legislation in particular that are so critical for patients to then be able to continue to benefit from biosimilars. You know, so stepping back, you know, in the bigger picture, if we're going to sustain biosimilar growth, it's going to be critical that we have appropriate regulatory and competitive mechanisms that allow for a resilient system that supports both biosimilars and new reference products, supporting competition and providing patients, physicians, and payers with the range of treatment options and the degree of flexibility of choice that I think we're all hoping for.
Another national policy consideration mentioned was tender systems, which are common in Europe and some other global markets. What are some of the pros and cons of a tender system, and should the United States consider implementing one to encourage greater biosimilar uptake?
Yeah, you know, so as I said, Europe has a lot of countries and they have a lot of different approaches. There are tenders in many European countries. Not all of them are the same. There are some that are multi-winner tenders, for example, where there's multiple products that can then win a tender and gain share. And then there's some that are single winner tenders. The single winner tender structure is a formal procedure where multiple suppliers bid, and then a single supplier is selected to supply a medicine. And we're seeing in some cases that countries are even backing off of that because it has its own consequences. And for example, in France, the single winner tender structure has led to shortages and product withdrawal from the market. And so there's reasons that doesn't work. And even with multi-winner tenders, we're seeing countries like the UK even soften on some of that. Now, in the United States, our healthcare system is based on price competition among manufacturers. And at Amgen, we believe that U.S. policymakers can best nurture a long-term sustainable marketplace with biosimilars by maintaining policies that allow for head-to-head competition on a level playing field between reference products and biosimilars. That's how we can sustain biosimilar growth. And to do that, it's really, again, critical to maintain appropriate regulatory and competitive mechanisms in the system and laws and regulations that support that.
What's the biggest piece of information that you hope people take away from this report?
Well, it's hard to get it down to just one, but what I'll say is that, you know, we're really at a pivotal moment for biosimilars in the U.S. We've essentially had the first wave of biosimilars come, and I think we've demonstrated how impactful they are, and we're moving into a second wave of biosimilars. This growing number of biosimilars is likely going to lead to a rapid evolution in the U.S. marketplace. And as part of that, we're going to see biosimilars across more therapeutic areas. We're going to see further expansion of biosimilars into pharmacy benefit reimbursement. We'll see the approval of additional interchangeable biosimilars in the U.S. We're going to see a continued focus on provider education and comfort in prescribing and using biosimilars. And, you know, we're also across the world gaining a tremendous amount of real-world evidence that will inform the future of the marketplace. It will enhance pharmacovigilance and I think create continued increases in confidence in these medicines. And so, you know, these developments are really reinforcing biosimilars as a viable, integral part of treatment options in the United States. And as they become accessible to new prescriber specialties and pharmacists who are new to biosimilars and payers and patients, we also expect to see changes to the patient support program landscape and the interactions that happen at the pharmacy counter.
And lastly, do you have any concluding thoughts?
Well, first of all, Skylar, thanks so much for having me today. This has been a great discussion. I'll close out with this. We're really hopeful that Amgen's Biosimilar Trends Report can help patients, healthcare professionals, prescribers, pharmacists, payers, policymakers, everyone better understand the critical role that biosimilars play in promoting a resilient healthcare system in the United States, first of all. And secondly, helping them understand how they can prepare for and help drive the rapid expansion of the U.S. marketplace with biosimilars.
Well, Chad, thank you for sharing your insights with us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can also find additional information on everything we discussed today in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.